Yes, I love it.
Sweet, he's giving me 300 boxes of grape nuts flakes.
Friends anybody ever had. And it's funny, but I feel as if I've known you all the time.
I love music, good music, but not swing. I sing.
Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Each week, we will dive into a certain star and talk to some people who know much about him. I'm Kate, your host, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Today's episode is Catherine Grayson, and who would better know Catherine than her own granddaughter, Kristen? I hope you enjoy the episode.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Well, I had oral surgery about a week and a half ago, and it has kicked my butt.
Oh, goodness.
So I'm still healing from that, but I'm here. So I've been resting today, just trying to get past this, but I'm excited to talk to you about my granny.
Yes, this is such an honor for me, really. And it's, you know, because I'm one of those people that, if somebody would say the name Catherine Grayson to me, I'd be like, oh yes, Catherine Grayson, the wonderful singer. Yes, I know who that woman is. Absolutely. Like, so I grew up watching your grandmother, and if I might give a little backstory on how I found her. So my maternal grandmother loved the Songbirds. So she loved Jeanette McDonald, Susanna Foster, Deanna Durbin, Judy Garland, your grandmother, and other people who sang, but she loved those women. Like, she was like, oh my gosh, these women are fantastic. I must spread the word about them.
And so, where did your grandmother come from?
So she came from Oklahoma.
Okay. And you're in Texas, right?
I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
That's
a
awesome.
Few states
from
you.
I just love hearing the background on the people that grew up loving my grandmother, because I'm also a singer and an actress, and
yes,
but what I do is so not the pop music of the time anymore, as I sing the same kind of stuff my grandmother did.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not in any way poised to be a household name, but my grandmother in her time was, and it was such an interesting, beautiful time.
Absolutely.
And that will never come again,
absolutely not.
So
I
love hearing how the singers from that time influenced people's lives.
Yes, absolutely. Like, she showed me a little movie called Seven Sweethearts, which I love to bits and pieces, which I love for Peggy Moran because she's in it. But then I was like, oh, who is this? And she goes, that is Catherine Grayson. And your grandmother starts singing. And I'm like, whoa, okay.
And you know also that my grandmother's sister was in that movie with her.
Really?
Frances Rayburn was in the movie with her. And that is her real sister.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Whoa. Mind blown.
Yeah, I never knew her. She passed away before I was born, but my mother loved her. They called her Baba for whatever reason. My grandmother was from North Carolina. Long history of, like, Virginia and North Carolina Southern roots, so everyone had a crazy name.
Yeah, because your grandmother's,
like, naturally or nickname wise, my grandmother's real name was Zelma.
Yeah, I was about to say she had a very interesting name
too. Weird names, and then most of the family called my grandmother Sissy, and I still to this day do not understand that name or where it came from, but that's just what they called her. Because again, the South,
right? So. Right. Because I know, because I was reading a little bit about her before. You know, I was like brushing up on my skills. I was like, okay, let me get some background information on her, because I loved her so much, but I didn't know much about her, because I was like, you know, oh, she was great, she must have been perfect, you know, she must have had a great life and all that. But the thing about her was, is that I was reading and I was like, her real name was Zelma? I was like, what a name.
What a name. And then here's a weird twist.
Yes.
So my grandmother on my mom's side is Zelma, who's Catherine Grayson. And then my grandmother on my dad's side, her name was Selma.
Oh.
She went by Sally. And my grandmother actually, to her close friends and, like, her personal secretary that she had for many, many years, Sally Sherman called her Zell or Zelma.
Oh.
So still in, within like our family and our close friends, people would still call her Zelma. I never did.
Right.
Because not my favorite name.
No.
But,
no.
I just called her, she wanted to be called, when I was born, she wanted to be called Granny.
Oh.
I was her first grandchild. It's only me and my brother.
Uh-huh.
And so, and then when my kids were born, mm-hmm. she wanted to be called Nanny Kate. So that's how my children, who are now teenagers, all still refer to her as Nanny Kate.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they knew her, though.
They, so my youngest was a little under two when she passed away. Because
mm-hmm.
she died in 2010.
Yeah, that's right. And, I remember that.
Yeah. And so they all met her. My oldest, of course, remembers her the most. And we mm-hmm. live like 10 minutes away from where her house was. So mm-hmm. we saw her quite often. I mean, I had three little kids. Mm-hmm. They're all a year and a half apart. So it was like a crazy time in my life right before she died.
Mm.
Cause I had just had all these children.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but they did know her, and I grew up about half hour away from where she lived. She was, her home was in, Santa Monica, California.
Oh, okay.
And I grew up in Woodland Hills, California,
mm-hmm.
about 30 minutes outside of where she lived.
Oh.
And so I spent all my Christmases with her. Very often I would spend like a huge portion of my summers with her as a child. And I have a little brother. So the two of us would, you know, go and stay. She had this 20-room house that was just amazing. It was a beautiful, beautiful house, which has since been transformed into something called the House of Rock, and it's this big party house now in Los Angeles, and it is very depressing because her house was so gorgeous. It was this like classic Hollywood home that had wood paneling throughout the entire thing, and stained glass window, and actually the house was used in several films.
Oh, whoa.
And so unfortunately it was sold, and the people that bought it, you know, put millions and millions of dollars in it and turned it into, now it's cool. It's cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
It just has lost that kind of classic Hollywood charm because it is now very modern.
Yeah.
There were certain things they couldn't change because the house, I think, is on a registry of historic homes or something.
Oh yeah.
But they changed what they could, and it sucks.
So,
but I did spend a lot of time with her growing up, and when mm-hmm. I was about 16, 17 years old, she wanted me to start singing with her because I'd always sung as a child,
mm-hmm.
but I never really studied. I just performed,
right.
And I was in several like children's performing companies and things like that.
That's so cool.
My very first voice lessons were with my grandmother.
Because I was going to ask,
really awesome.
Yes, because I was going to ask, you know, one of my questions for you, because you are a performer, you are a director, you know, you've done Broadway, you've done a lot of great shows. And so my question for you was, you know, now that you answered it, like, was she an influence for you for that?
Absolutely. So much so. I am a high soprano as well, that I kind of like didn't want to flow with the times mm-hmm. at all. Originally, I was mm-hmm. like, I'm a soprano. I have these high notes. She used to vocalize me up to like an A above high C, like really,
whoa.
Really crazy high stuff. Because when I was younger, it was just so effortless for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm naturally gifted in that way. There's mm-hmm. some people that have these crazy high notes, and my mother had them, and I had them mm-hmm. coming from my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to school in New York for musical theater and it started to become very clear, like, what my type was, I resisted what my type was. My type is, I'm much more of, like, the funny best friend, personality-wise,
yeah.
than my grandmother ever was.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, she was very funny, but she just didn't play those roles. She
no.
looked like a little delicate flower, and she
absolutely.
Played all the, you know, soprano-y roles.
She played
so
like...
I resisted my type for a long time because the influence of who she was and what she heard in my voice. And she was like, you've always got to sing soprano.
Mm-hmm.
She called it chest belting. None of that chest belting. You stay in your head. You'll always have those high notes. And So for a long time, that's what I did. And throughout my 20s, I toured with like Gilbert and Sullivan and a ton of musical theater that was all soprano roles. And then as I've gotten older, I've been like, oh, I'm actually not that. Not that I can't sing those roles, but I'm way more, you know, into like being the sassy redheaded vixen than being the sweet girl next door. Plus, I'm older now, so I don't play the sweet girl next door anymore. Right. But her influence was imperative. Like, I not only just being her granddaughter and learning, it's funny because when I went to school in New York, I actually learned more about her than I'd ever known because she was just my grandmother to me growing up.
Right.
But then I went to school in New York for musical theater. And there were entire portions of my education where there would be, you know, a film component in a class, and there was like 20 minutes of my grandmother, and people kept turning around in class and being like, oh my God, you look so much like her. Oh my God, that's so crazy. Yeah. We're watching your grandmother right now, you know, just because they knew me. And we were all in our, you know, teens and 20s. So
absolutely.
So it was crazy. So, and an interesting way to grow up.
Absolutely. So, like, another question of mine is, you know, because you're the second granddaughter I've spoken to. So the first granddaughter I've spoken to, actually, she was a friend of mine. Her name was Gloria Jean, and she knew your grandmother pretty well. She was at Universal, and she was a songbird as well. And so I've talked to her granddaughter as well. So my question to you is, how did you know your grandmother was famous? Did she sit down and talk with you and be like, oh, by the way, I had a film career at one point in time?
No, I don't think that was ever a conversation. It was very well known that she was who she was. Like, growing up, when I would perform, because I was a performer, and I was performing in New York when I was a kid, touring and stuff. So she would show up at a show that I was doing, and the entire place would go crazy. You know, like the parents or grandparents of my contemporaries would be like, that's your grandmother? Your grandmother's Catherine Grayson? Because she didn't try, but she was very glamorous. Like, she was from the era where you didn't go to the grocery store without eyelashes on.
Oh, you know? Absolutely.
So she came to my school play, even. She was still Catherine Grayson at my school play. She was always dressed up and looked beautiful and had her red lipstick on and everything. So, my mom was her only child, and my grandfather was also a performer. So it was just a part of our life.
Yeah.
I remember being like 8 years old, and my grandmother was performing on the Academy Awards.
Whoa.
There was a whole like, they had like a dedication to all the
I've seen this. 100 Years of Stars. Yeah.
And a bunch of people. And I went dress shopping with my mom and my grandmother to dress her for that. I remember going to this beautiful boutique, and they had pulled all these gowns for her.
Wow.
And you know, like, that's not every kid's situation. You know, most kids aren't going to a place to dress their grandmother for the Academy Awards. So yeah, who she was definitely always a part of our life, but our relationship and our family time couldn't have been further from the realities of the business. That was never, when I went to school in New York, I guess we talked about the business a little bit, but she was my granny. Like, we watched movies together. She had this huge bed that my mom actually, my mom had her own room growing up, but she would mostly sleep in with my grandmother because they watched movies together, and she had, my grandmother had this huge bed. And after she divorced my grandfather, it was just she and my mom. So they were very close. And then, so when I was little and my brother and I would go there, we would very often stay with her too, because she had this huge bed and we would watch scary movies. My grandmother was very into scary movies.
Are you serious?
She lived in this scary house that had like knocking in the walls, literally. I was, from a very young age, always like, there is paranormal stuff is happening here. And my grandmother loves this. She loves these movies. She was a really neat human being. She was very unlike the persona that she played on screen. Very down to earth.
Yeah. Because I was going to ask, what was she like as a human? Because most people, like, when I watched her, I was like, oh my God, she probably was singing for, like, everything, and she probably had, like, this great life, and she had everything together. But I saw one of your posts on Instagram, and it was about her, and I think it was Frank Sinatra, how she never wanted to kiss him, and I thought that was hilarious. And you're like, dude, I'm not surprised by this at all. Like, she didn't want to, like, she is far from being this perfect princess that everybody knows and loves.
Yeah, she had a very, like, kind of wicked sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was in the business very, very young.
And, yeah, do you know how she got into the business?
Married at, like, 18 to her first husband. My grandfather was her second husband.
Oh.
And first husband went off to war and World War II, and then my grandfather kind of swooped in there after they kind of annulled or something their marriage. It was very short-lived. Mm. And then the second husband was my grandfather, who mm-hmm. was a ladies' man, and mm. he did not do her right. So she, you know, pretty young with my mom, I think my mom was about 2, she was like, get out. And that was in those days, yes, that was kind of more prevalent in Hollywood, but it was still pretty rare. My grandmother was from the South and pretty mm. traditional as mm. far as, like, you know, how marriage should be, and so she was not having it. No. And raised my mom from the time she was 2 on, and my grandfather went on to have 4 wives past that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So, and she never remarried. She had plenty of men that were interested in her and opportunities mm-hmm. she had wanted to, but mm-hmm. I think after the 2, and my grandfather, I think, did a number. Mm. Just, that was kind of his bag. He liked to do a number on women. And so, and he was very handsome, and so I think after that point, she just never wanted to remarry. She, you know, that house was hers. Everything, mm-hmm. you know, she was self-made. Mm. And in fact, not only was she self-made, but she took care of everyone around her. She, you know, took care of both of her parents, her brothers, her sister. And she was very, very close to her family because they moved out here for her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think she felt indebted to them for the lifestyle that they chose to mm. support her career. So for the rest of their lives, she supported them. Mm. And she's a very generous and very kind person. Mm. And I think that was, even though I learned a lot about singing and, you know, about the kind of nastiness of the business too mm-hmm. from her, the thing I learned most was, you know, like, if you're blessed with things, you don't just hoard them.
Right.
And you know, you give them away. And she gave away her beautiful voice and her talent, but she also kind of, like, gave away her money and gave away, you know, her time. And so mm-hmm. I think that is something I gained from her, was the always wanting to, like, give to others and take care of people. And that's what I'm trying to pass on to my 3 teenagers.
Yeah.
Right now,
so. You know, Gloria Jean's granddaughter said the same thing about her grandmother, which was very interesting because, you know, because your grandmother started in this business when she was like 15, 16 years old. Like,
she did, yes.
She was very young. And it was interesting because, like, one of her first movies was an Andy Hardy movie, which I'm pretty sure, like, at every kid at MGM did an Andy Hardy movie. It was weird. So it's like Donna Reed did one. Lana Turner did, like, 3. Your grandmother did, like, 1. So, you know, that was, like, one of her starting things. And it's interesting because Joe Pasternak, who was a genius, you know, who discovered Deanna, who discovered My Friend Gloria, he went over to MGM and, you know, he was going to take Deanna with him. And MGM was like, Joe, we kind of dropped Deanna. We can't rehire her. And so they were like, okay, so let's just find somebody who sounds like Deanna. Katherine Grayson, how do you sound? And she just starts belting. And then Joe Pasternak's like, all right, I know what to do with this kid. And immediately just threw her into, like, these musicals at MGM. And they, like, 7 Sweethearts was, like, I think one of the first ones that she did. And they just showed what talent your grandmother had. But knowing MGM, like, MGM was not an easy studio to work for. Absolutely not.
No, I mean, she went through a lot. And then as she started to blossom into being a woman, Mm-hmm. And she wasn't just this, you know, beautiful girl. She was mm-hmm. now a woman, and she was curvy and sexy and all of that. She yeah. experienced all the things you can imagine around sexual harassment, mm-hmm. Coercion and things like that. Like, my grandfather was in one of the movies with her. So I'm trying to remember the name of it right now, but they saw the sparks happening with mm-hmm. my grandmother and my grandfather, and they removed him from the film.
Oh, that yeah, I
didn't
know.
Till the clouds roll by. He was in that with her, and there are outtakes of it. Mm. And you know, there was a lot of control on what they wanted her to do and who they wanted her to have in her life.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there had been so many marriages and messes already made. I mean, actors are super good at screwing up their lives.
Yeah.
And so I think they wanted to keep her, you know, America's
sweetheart. Yeah.
You know? And so, She did go through quite a bit of that kind of control that others have spoken about. I mean, just the whole studio system in general.
Yeah.
It was, you know, eat this, not this, take this pill, do this thing.
Yeah. Because look at Judy Garland.
I think part of the reason why my grandmother is not more of a household name is that she was not a drug addict.
No.
She was not a drunk. She did not have a million marriages, and mm-hmm. I mean, plenty of men wanted to marry her, and mm-hmm. she just didn't want that life. Mm-hmm. She was inside. She was a very simple, kind person mm-hmm. who came from the old South. I mean,
yeah.
she and was a woman, and that I think is the thing. As I've gotten older, that I really realized about her was mm-hmm. like there was no precedent. This mm-hmm. was not now where you have 100 plus years of film history to look at how to be a woman in a business that spits women out. Mm-hmm. She didn't have any precedent. She was the precedent.
Yeah.
She was part of the creation of that world.
Yeah.
And so to be a woman who was born in 1922 mm-hmm. in the middle of the Great Depression
mm-hmm.
and to 20 years later be one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, like
right.
that's a huge thing. And
huge
she dealt with it with grace.
She really did. Oh my God. Like, because when you read about her, like, there's nothing bad to say about her. You know what I'm saying? It's not like she went out and punched somebody in the face. You know what I'm saying? It's
But it was funny because her really good friends were people like that. Like, Zsa Zsa Gabor was a really good friend of hers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know Ann Miller was one of her BFFs.
They were good friends. Ann Miller was a really good friend
yes.
of hers.
And I love Ann Miller.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And there were, you know, those women, most of her friends were way more like the splashy headline type women.
Uh-huh.
What's so funny is she'd be on the phone with these people. Like, I remember being in bed with my grandmother, mm-hmm. watching a movie, you know, and when I say in bed with my grandmother, you have to understand she had like a king size bed that was made for two kings. It was so huge. It was
Whoa.
The biggest bed in my life I've ever seen.
Whoa.
It was custom made for her. So like we were in the same room, but nowhere near each other. And we'd be watching these movies, and then Zsa Zsa Gabor would just call, and they'd be talking about like Stouffer's pizza or something. Like, it was very random. It was very much like what any of us would just like chit chat about with
right.
our friends. You know,
girl, did you hear about this? No, I didn't. But, girl, spill the tea. You know, I'm here for the gossip.
But there was just not a lot of like normal tea spilled, especially, you know, I mean, I was born in 1974, and my mm-hmm. first memories of their conversations were probably, you know, in the 80s.
Right.
So these were older women by then.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were not. There was no hot goss happening at that point. This was, you know, this was Metamucil conversation.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It was just, and it was such a duality to like be this person's grandmother and hanging out with her, and then, you know, hearing what the rest of the world would think about your grandmother because of her background and her career. Mm-hmm. And just to know, like, yeah, no, she's not actually that glamorous. She's a pretty chill, awesome lady.
Yeah. And, she seems like it. I mean, when I watch her, I haven't seen all of her work, you know, but I have seen like a chunk of it, which is great. You know, my favorites are like Kiss Me, Kate, Seven Sweethearts, and Anchors Away. You know, I love those traditional ones, but, you know, because TCM plays Kiss Me, Kate a lot. So it's great to see her. So it's nice to see her. And, you know, when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, she's great. She's feisty. You know, she works with Howard Keel a lot, which I've noticed. And her and Howard Keel, like, have a great chemistry. But I'm sure working on this, you know, working at MGM was probably, you know, challenging because at the same time, like you said, you know, she went through a lot. And knowing Louis B. Mayer, he probably was like, okay, Catherine, you're going to work with this guy, you're going to work with this guy, and you have to, and she probably may not even like them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I know Howard Keel was her friend for the rest of their lives. They were friends.
Okay, good.
And I actually was raised, Leslie Keel is his daughter, and he was remarried. He married a younger woman, and Leslie was their daughter, and we were around the same age, and she used to come to my birthday parties and stuff.
Huh.
So I know that she did like Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mario Lanza was also a very good friend.
Mario Lanza worked with her, too.
His wife died.
Oh.
And my grandmother actually helped take care of their kids when he and his wife died. He had four children.
Oh, wow.
And my aunt, my quote-unquote aunt growing up, was Colleen Lanza, who was Mario's daughter and my mom's best friend.
Oh.
So she was very fiercely loyal, my grandmother, to the people that she had in her life, like I had said before. Mm-hmm. And Mario Lanza was no different.
Yeah.
I have heard stories, not from my grandmother, but from other people about, you know, how he would like stick his tongue in her mouth or something like that if they were kissing. I don't actually know that to be true. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem consistent with the amount of sacrifice my grandmother gave to that family, money-wise and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, who knows? I don't know all of the ins and outs. I do know that I do remember her saying that she thought that when you mentioned that on my Instagram, that she thought that Frank Sinatra, like, had tuberculosis or something.
Yeah.
I remember her telling that story. It's vague, but I remember her saying something like, he was so skinny, I thought he was sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't want to kiss him. She was like,
she did not want to kiss him at all.
She was like,
she was in a couple of movies with him.
Yes. She did Anchors Away.
I know that she and Gene Kelly got along well.
Okay, good. Because most people that I know, you know, Gloria Jean included, were like, Gene Kelly was terrible. And I was like, okay. So I'm glad she got along with him.
I think he was the kind of person, like, you just kind of did what you needed to do around him. Mm-hmm. And you just made it happen, and that was what I believe my grandmother did to just kind of make it easy to work with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm sure she was easy.
She was such a pro. She would just, like, do her job.
Oh, which I love. She looks like it. Every time I'm watching her, I'm just like, wow, girl. And she's singing, and I'm like, girl, you're hitting those notes. Like, you're fabulous. Like, you know, and it wasn't really much longer when my friend sent me the photo I sent you of, like, five of the best female vocalists in one photo. Susanna Foster, Deanna Durbin, Judy Garland, Jeanette McDonald, and your grandmother, all in one photo. I said, whoa, that is a powerhouse of a photo. I was like,
yeah,
girl.
It really is. It really is. And it's also, like, you think about what a lot of those ladies, like, they're smiling and they're glamorous and they're gorgeous, but there's so much that they endured underneath the cuteness of that photo.
Yes.
The reality of the grueling hours and the fact that, again, like, there was no precedent set for how they were going to have to deal with, like, real life stuff, like having a child or being married, and what would be expected of them over what would be expected from a man in the same part of his life. you know?
Right, and so absolutely.
They were heroes because, you know, they all continued to work after having children.
They did.
Not as much.
Yeah, you know? All of them, with the exception of Jeanette McDonald, were parents. Like, every right. single one of them. And it, with the exception of Jeanette McDonald, who died really young. But other than that, they were moms. They were working yeah. moms. And it's really hard, you know, because sometimes, you know, when I try to reach out to these people's kids and stuff, it's, you know, they have a very different view of their parents. Sometimes, especially daughters and mothers, they dislike each other for some strange and odd reason. I don't know yeah. why. It's weird. So
yeah.
they always be like, my mom was
a
load of crap.
I definitely understand that. And I, yes, I understand it very well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact is that I was my grandmother's granddaughter, so mm-hmm. I wasn't there for all of the day in, day out kind of raising kids stuff that yeah. my mom and my grandmother would have had together mm-hmm. or me and my mom had.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, grandchildren kind of get it easier because unless she had raised me completely, and then it would have been different. But
right.
most of my interactions with her were always happy times where I would go over to her house and I'd watch movies in the library and I'd eat with her. And it was just, you know, it was just my childhood. Mm-hmm. It wasn't being raised in that. And mm-hmm. I think being raised in that, you know, where your mom and or your father is on set 15, 17 hours a day
mm-hmm.
and you're being raised by a staff or by another family member or something. Mm-hmm. I think that can do something to a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Because most of these kids that I know, like, they'll be like, you know, because their parents were like movie stars and stuff. It's very, I get the really interesting thing about their like, well, they were movie stars, but at home, they were just mom and dad to me. You know, they weren't major movie stars. They did mom and dad things. They were head of the PTA. They went to school functions. Like, they did normal things. You know, they
yes.
weren't normal. They weren't movie stars. You know, they were just normal people. But when they're working, it's like they have a whole different persona, and they got to put on this front. So I'm pretty sure your grandmother at this point, when she's working at MGM, you know, she has to put on this front. She has to be like, oh, I hate this person, or I hate this director, or I hate this the way this song sounds, but I got to make my money somehow.
Correct, because she was not only making it for herself and my mom, but she was, like I said, supporting
supporting everybody.
You know, helping a lot of family members
mm-hmm.
And friends at times. So, and like I said, I mean, she'd give you the shirt off her back. She was extremely generous.
Mm.
And she even said to me later on, like, I had to do that. I had to support them. They moved the whole family moved to Los Angeles for me from camp. They were in St. Louis when she was discovered. They had gone to St. Louis from North Carolina. And she was like, I'd do it again. And I was like, really? You would do all of that again? She's like, yeah, I would, because I was in a position to, at that time, make a lot of money
mm-hmm.
And have things that would last forever
mm-hmm.
for our family. And mm-hmm. and I wouldn't ever not do that again.
Mm-hmm.
I think what was really neat about my grandmother, too, is, you know, nowadays, if you have like somebody that's doing musicals, they've started on stage, usually.
Yes.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, movie musicals are few and far between now, and they're very poppy.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need a stage actor. And like very often, like let's take The Prom, for example. Mm-hmm. You had this incredible cast. I saw The Prom on Broadway
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago, right before it opened, and previews, and I thought it was phenomenal.
Yeah,
and the cast had been with it for years. Well, then they go and do the movie, and they don't use anyone from the original cast. They used a couple of Broadway people, but they mostly used film people.
Yeah.
Who are not stage people. And mm-hmm. some of them were. And like Meryl Streep, of course, has been on stage.
Yeah.
But it bothers me because
it does. It really does. I watched it and I was like, they should have just went to Broadway, say, hey, we're gonna
yeah.
make a movie, take the Broadway actors, give them jobs, literally. And reproduce
yeah.
what you've already done, because it's fabulous. So why mess up? I didn't like it too much. I mean, I was kind of like you. I was like, you know, because I had seen the Broadway show as well. So I was like, well, I'd seen like parts of it, like people had recorded and stuff. So I've seen like parts of it, but I thought it was fabulous personally. And I listened to the soundtrack, the original Broadway cast, and I was like, this is phenomenal. Like, it's wonderful.
It was. I also think a show like that, where there's so much like inside Broadway humor and things like that, it just so belongs on the stage to me. Mm-hmm. There's so much that isn't going to translate on a Netflix movie, but I loved it. I loved it for what it was. And I also love the themology of it and being like very pro LGBTQ and, you know, pro acceptance and all that. I loved it.
Yeah.
But I think my point was that my grandmother did not start on stage.
Oh.
She started as a singer, like singing in church and things like that, and then like went straight to film.
Yeah.
And went and had like lessons. You know, MGM would give these singers acting lessons and poise lessons and this lesson and that lesson. So she learned a lot of things on the job.
She had to. She had to.
And then what I love though is that later she, after having been on film, started doing Broadway and national tours and things like that.
Oh!
Because the studio system changed. So she took over for Julie Andrews in Camelot and played Guinevere on Broadway. And then she headed the national tour for a year and a half.
Whoa. That and I did not know.
The national tour of that show was so big that they had their own train.
What?
So, like, Camelot would roll into town, and it wasn't, like, I've done seven national tours myself.
Yeah.
Usually bus and truck.
Yeah.
Or now, like, sometimes you'll fly, and the truck has to get there by the time the cast gets there. But it's very different now. In those days, the show was so massive, and there weren't, like, there was just not the kind of trucks that we have now. So they everyone was on a train. My mom was with my grandmother. She was in, like, middle school. And my grandmother pulled her out of school. They had a tutor with her. And she went on tour with my grandmother.
Whoa.
They toured all over the country together.
Wow.
Yeah. And,
that's,
you know, just
amazing.
Such a neat time.
Yeah, I mean, especially, like, with a name like Katherine Grayson, of course, like, it's going to be huge. You know, because she was, so, like, when she got to MGM, the publicity department literally was like, all right, we got to change your name. We got to give you a backstory. We got to do this. We got to make sure you can act. You know, we know you can sing. Like, we understand you can sing. Like, that's not a problem. Like, we get it. Like, you can sing. That's great. And Joe Pasternak literally comes in and he's like, look, I was just at Universal. And I, you know, I produced Deanna Durbin, I produced Gloria Jean over there, and I produced Susanna Foster. Now I'm going to produce Katherine Grayson. So he was literally the kind of the reason why your grandma became kind of Katherine Grayson, like the name, like he was the reason behind it. So he promoted her, but he was like, okay, you're like 16. You're young. We got to make sure, we got to give you acting lessons. We got to redo your hair. We got to do your makeup. Like, you got to learn how to remember lines, read, sight read, like everything. So it's probably like, and I'm pretty sure, like, I think you would have some experience with, like, it's kind of grueling work trying to learn everything. Cause I know that you've been on Broadway, you've done stage work, you've directed. I'm sure it's a lot of hours put into it.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is I grew up learning how to do all of that. And then I went to college for it. I went to Hollywood High Performing Arts. I went to college. So, like, that was my goal. But my grandmother's goal was to be an opera singer.
Oh.
That's what she really wanted. She wanted
Deanna
to sing
Durbin
at the Met.
Too.
And eventually she did. But she really didn't want to be on film. She didn't want all of those things at first. And then, you know, of course, once she started doing it and, like, her name was above the title of Showboat, and you know, like, and Kiss Me, Kate. I mean, that was a big deal. But that was not her initial goal.
Right. Like, Deanna Durbin's wasn't either. She wanted to sing at the opera as well, and she never got to sing at the Met. She always told Henry Koster that, you know, Universal took that chance from her. But, you know, it was interesting because Katherine, you know, your grandmother was making a lot of money. And so she was making, like, so she started off at $100 a week, which back then was a lot of money when you make $100 a week. And then they bumped her salary up to like $1,000.
She was making a lot more money. I think it was actually like $75 a week. I mean, it was not great, but everything was so much cheaper then too, right?
Yeah.
So $75 then was like $7,500 now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when a loaf of bread is 10 cents or whatever, your money goes a lot further.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. And then she was really smart because she bought property.
Ooh.
And that later on in her life sustained her, was having this house that was worth, you know, I mean, she bought the house for not very much compared to what it was sold for. Let's just put it that way.
She
sat on that for 60 something years.
Wow.
And at the end of her life, that was what sustained her. And so she was, and you know, of course she had a pension from SAG and all of the things, but yes, she was able to live comfortably because she had invested early on in her home and owning property in Los Angeles. And you know, that now, I mean, we have some of the most expensive real estate in the world.
Yeah. I was going to say rent is like a grand, and a lot of my friends, because I'm a film editor, which is interesting, you know, I'm not in it professionally. I've wanted to go into it professionally, but you know, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. And you know, unfortunately, I don't know very many. I mean, I know a lot of people's kids, which is interesting, but they're not in the business, so it wouldn't go very far. Gloria Jean was, and Mary Costa are the only people I know that were in the business, and they said, oh, if you ever want to get in the business, just let us know and we'll recommend you. Gloria has since passed, but Mary's like 90, and I'm like, girl, I don't want you to like stress yourself out trying to write me a recommendation letter for MGM or something. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm good. Great.
Oh, but that was so sweet though.
I know, right? And so I'm a film editor, but the thing about it is that, you know, people have said, you know, if you want to get in the business, you got to move to New York or LA. Like, you've got to be where the business is. And unfortunately for me, I'm like, I can't afford LA. Like, I don't know how you people do it. Yeah. I don't know
how people do it.
Yeah.
Now, when I went to school in New York was in the 90s, and I had three roommates in a tiny apartment. And when I moved back to LA, I got this huge apartment with one roommate. I had my own bedroom, my own bathroom, and I was paying a fraction of what I was paying in New York.
Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. And now it's a big, they're on par with each other as far as how expensive it is.
It is. It's crazy.
And so I don't know how these kids do it.
Like, I don't know either.
From wherever, and they want to be an actor, and it's a lot. I'm very lucky because this is my home and this is where I was born and raised.
Yeah.
But not everybody has that.
Absolutely not. It's especially when you're just starting out in the business, because it's like, especially I know, like if you're on Broadway, you know, you don't know where your next meal is coming from. And that's why kind of the reason why for me, you know, I've got friends right now who are in the industry who work for like companies who do like film editing and all that, who don't have jobs right now and they don't know where their next meal is coming from. And I'm like, oh, you know, I work at a grocery store. So I was like, well, thank goodness I work there right now, because it's such a crazy time right now with COVID and everything. It's just,
I mean, I'm a stage actress.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I do. And my last paycheck was March 1st of last year.
Whoa.
Now I've been teaching since then. I teach, theater online to kids, teens.
Good.
And stuff like that. But it's not a lot of money, and it's limited hours. Luckily, I'm married to someone who is able to teach from home and has a full-time teaching gig.
Oh, good.
Or I do not know what we would be doing, because it's already hard enough to live in Los Angeles and be an equity stage actress, because there's just not a lot of work here for equity actors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in normal times. But right now, there's literally no work. There's no theater whatsoever in the entire country that is union.
Right.
There are some theaters that are doing work, but they're non-union theaters. Equity has not given the go-ahead because it's so bad for anybody to keep working. So believe me, I understand. And yes, any job that anybody has right now is essential, in my opinion, because everybody's just trying to survive.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a hard time. I hope that, you know, I know you work at a store. I hope you're really safe.
Yes, I am. We have to wear masks on everything. And funny enough, they're like, you know, I asked my mom, who's kind of like, well, the vaccine's here. So she's like, so are they going to give it to you at your store? Are they offering it at your store? And I was like, okay, well, let me go ask, like, the head of the departments and be like, so where are we on this department? Because I need it because we're working literally with the public every day. So they said, well, it is available. I said, okay, great. When can I sign up? Like, I'm ready to take it now. And they're like, but you got to drive all the way to Houston to get it. And I was like, what?
Oh, and I'm like, well, at least in your state, you could do that.
Yes.
In California, they are not giving it to anyone who's not an essential health worker or someone 65 and over right now. Because they prioritized it by risk.
Yes.
So essential health workers, mm-hmm. I think all people that work in any kind of essential work, like grocery stores, should be getting it too.
Yeah.
And I also feel, because everybody wants schools to come back. I mean, there's like, my husband is a music teacher.
Oh.
And the horrible things that I will read on like Nextdoor and stuff, mm-hmm. where they're like, these teachers need to get back in the classroom. My husband is working like 9-hour days online teaching. Right. Mm-hmm. And it is very difficult, but he is working. He's working his butt off and earning every penny.
Right.
And these people that are complaining, and I'm thinking like, okay, well then why don't you tell your state representatives mm-hmm. that teachers are essential and they should be vaccinated early.
Absolutely.
So that they can get back in the classroom. That's what should have been prioritized.
Absolutely. I agree. Like it's like, but you know, but it's interesting because here also like in my county, like where we are at, you know, it's only healthcare workers and 65 plus. Well, my parents are 65 plus, and so, you know, I'm like, okay, mom, dad, you know, are you going to get the vaccine? And they're like, we're not going to get it right now. We're going to wait till, like, they get all the kinks out and all that. You know, we're just going to wait. And I was like, oh, fabulous, great, wonderful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I wish they'd get it.
I know.
If your parents are hearing this, I hope they get the vaccine.
I know. That's what I'm saying to my dad's like, I'm not opposed to getting it. Like, I'm not opposed to it, but, you know, they haven't told us that we're at risk right now. And, you know, our doctors haven't reached out to us and said, we need to get it. I'm like, well, God, please. I was just like, people, for honest, good reason. Somebody actually messaged me on Twitter the other day. And they said, because they posted the photo of, like, all the songbirds, which is interesting, the photo I sent you. And they're like, if they were still around, do you think they would have taken the vaccine? I said, girl, they would have been in line. They would have said, move.
You know why they would, too? Because people that are older, especially from that generation, mm-hmm. they remember the war.
Yes.
My grandmother was born in 1922. She remembers growing up in the Great Depression.
Yes.
She remembers polio. My father was born in 1936. Yeah. He remembers polio. He remembers mm-hmm. people in his neighborhood that he used to play with dropping dead from polio.
Yeah.
So that generation, there were no anti-vaxxers.
No.
There were no science deniers. They were like, oh, there's something that's going to prevent me from dying? Great. Put it in my arm immediately.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I think we have a couple of generations mm-hmm. of privilege where it's, you know, I like, well, that's never happened to me. So it couldn't possibly, it's like, why do you think you never got polio? Because of the vaccine.
Absolutely.
So like learn from that. But mm-hmm. because I feel like our generation, I don't know how old you are, but
I'm 28.
I'm 46.
I'm 28. I'm young.
Okay. So you're young.
Yeah.
But, you could be my kid. You could be my kid. That's crazy. I keep forgetting how old I am, but, like that, my generation, mm-hmm. which is the generation after my mom and my parents, which my mom is a baby boomer.
Yeah. So are my parents.
74.
Yeah. My parents are baby boomers.
Like that generation, because they came, they were born right after World War II and stuff.
Yeah.
They don't mess around when it comes to like vaccines.
No, they're on it.
They don't think like, do I have an option here? Put it in my arm.
Absolutely.
You know, and because I was raised, my dad is 84.
Yeah.
And so he raised me to understand about World War II mm-hmm. and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm also like a social justice warrior.
Absolutely.
Because I was raised with all that knowledge and that I was lucky. I'm privileged to live in a country and a time where we are not at constant war and I am not in a concentration camp, even though my dad is Jewish, and right. I'm lucky. And so I have that constantly in my rear view and my forward view, right. that, you know, I'm fortunate and that can change at any moment. And so when, and looking all around us in the last 10 months of mm-hmm. everything that's happened, and I'm like, take the vaccine, people.
Just take it. Like, it's 2 seconds of your time.
These heroes that have had, like, vaccine in their car, and there was a snowstorm, mm-hmm. and instead of sitting in their car and wasting the vaccine, they jumped out of their car in the snow and were rolling down people's windows in the snow and saying, can we please put this vaccine in your arm?
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. I heard that. We're in such a crazy time right now.
And we are. And
I'm trying to look at all those little victories and be like, okay, it's not all bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I'm you know, and I hate to say this, but you know, I told my mom this the other day. I was like, I'm so glad, like, a lot of people, like, a lot of my famous heroes are not here right now, because I would be so worried about their health. I would have been like, Catherine Grayson, get the vaccine, stay inside. Like, don't do anything. Like, just stay indoors. Like, do not do a damn thing.
I'm telling you, she would have. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, she had diabetes starting in her 40s.
Oh, that I did not know.
And was a full-blown type 2 diabetic, and I would watch her go through, especially later on when I lived with her in my 20s before I got married, and we had some really, like, low blood sugar close calls. She got older, and, you know, I watched how science kept my grandmother alive. I mean, truly, like, you know, if she didn't have insulin and doctors and all of the things that she needed, she would not have lived till she was 88 years old and met her great-grandchildren. And so if I can influence anyone listening, please, you know, listen to science. Listen, I'm not saying it's 100% always correct, but right. but I mean,
they know what they're doing.
Almost 450,000 dead people in 10 months from this thing, and we need to do everything we can to eradicate it.
Yeah. So when she she had insulin shots and everything like that?
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Like several times a day, had to take her blood sugar.
Oh,
and then when I got pregnant with my first child, my oldest Ryan, I had to I had what's called gestational diabetes.
Oh, okay.
And I had a little taste of what having diabetes tastes like. Now, mine went away after pregnancy. So in women with gestational diabetes, basically for your pregnancy, you are considered a diabetic. And I had to be on, I had to, like, measure my blood sugar. I had to take insulin on my second pregnancy and things like that. And having just that small taste of it, I was like, I am going to do whatever I have to do for the rest of my life to not become a diabetic. It runs rampantly in my family. My grandmother had it. My mom had it, you know, so my mom still has it. And so I was like, I've got to do whatever I can. So after having my 3 kids, I lost a bunch of weight. I walk 10,000 steps a day. I work out every day. I eat really well and really healthily. I avoid every, you know, anything processed, because I just, you know, did not want, after having it pregnancy 3 times, I was like, this is horrendous.
It
is. My grandmother lived like that for 40 something years.
Jesus. Oh my God, baby.
Yeah.
Like, I know my grandfather, my dad's dad was a diabetic as well. And I just remember one summer, cause we, you know, we're from Fort Worth. That's about 4 or 5 hours away from where I am now. And it's, you know, it's my home, but you know, when we would go and visit them, and he would have to take insulin shots as well. And I remember I had to go and, like, fill it up for him. And I was like, God, you have to take shots and everything. Like, that's like, it must be so painful. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? And I just was like, you know, I cannot be a diabetic. So I try to eat as healthily as I can. You know, I use my air fryer. I try to avoid going out to eat as much as I can, you know, but you know, it's hard, but, you know, for me, it always make sure.
And you're young now, but as you get older, too, if you have any kind of, like, resistance to insulin, it can just, it continues as you age. It doesn't get easier. It gets harder. So I'm going to go down fighting. That's all I'm going to say. Some things are unavoidable just because of your genealogy. And then some things are, they can be brought on. And because of my experience of being a diabetic in pregnancy, I went back to school to be a dietitian. And then I started acting again, and I never finished that degree, but I learned so much. And one of the things that I will never forget that my professor said was, you don't become a type 2 diabetic from eating healthily and working out. That's how you avoid it. So if you do the opposite and you have it in your you have a proclivity to it in your genealogy, you will become a diabetic if if you don't work hard. And so it has never left me. And I am still, you know, every day I literally get up and it's like, okay, put on the armor and get into the battle, because I know that diabetes wants to take me down and I'm not going to let it. But it isn't every day, like every single day I'm like, okay, strap the Fitbit on, go for the walk, do the yoga, eat well.
I exercise,
you know,
too. So.
And I learned that from, you know, having watched my grandmother and her struggle. It was, you know, I think in the end, I mean, she died at 88 years old and she died in her sleep. So, you know, she had several like health problems throughout the years, but to live till you're 88 and die in your sleep, that's, as much as I miss her, as hard as that day was, I will never forget it.
Yeah.
When I got the phone call, as hard as it all was, like, she had a really awesome life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she was a pioneer for women in film, and especially in musical film. And she was a good person and loved her family and was giving and kind. And it's kind of like, and she lived till she was 88 years old. So, and she lived half of her life, more than half of her life, with a terrible disease that could have killed her many times over, and she lived till she was 88. So you know, when I think about that, it's like I never wanted to lose my grandmother, and I'm sad I lost her. And she didn't know my kids better, but at the same time, like, she lived a really charmed and beautiful life, and till her dying day, there were black and white photos that would arrive from Australia or Scotland or somewhere in like South America of young people like you who had discovered her films, fallen in love, and wanted her to sign her autograph on a picture. You know? And I got to, when I was living with her, I would sometimes collect the mail, and I'd see all these different stamps from all over the world. And that's like, what an amazing legacy to be able to still influence young kids when this woman is almost 90 years old.
Absolutely.
You know? Like, what a gift that she was able to give that to the rest of the world.
Because when I was 8-9 years old when I started, when I first heard of her, and my grandmother, you know, who literally came from nothing, you know, she came from, I think, a bunch of farmers, I think, you know, she loved your grandmother very much. I mean, she loved the musicals that she was in. I think that's, you know, because she grew up in the Depression as well, and she grew up watching your grandmother on the screen. I think she saw every movie your grandmother was in, at least. She told me, she was like, I saw Catherine Grayson in the theaters, and I was like, ooh-wee. So it's so interesting, like, for me, because when she passed her on to me, I was like, she always said, you know, there may not be, there may come a time where people may not know who Catherine Grayson is. And I remember when I was a kid in school, I was in music class, you know, they gave us an assignment, you know, to write about certain stars, you know, musical stars or something with music. And I was like, ooh, I was like, so I remember doing this poster, and I had Deanna Durbin on it, I had Susanna Foster, I had your grandmother on it, and I had Jeanette McDonald. And I was like, these are the pioneer women of musicals. And everyone was like, who are these people? And I'm like, I don't care. And somebody's like, aren't they dead? I was like, no, Deanna Durbin is still very much alive, and so is Catherine Grayson. They're here. They're alive. Get it together. And I'm like, this is the plan. And I was like, and my teacher was just like, I'm very shocked you know who these people are. And I'm like, well, these women could belt. And you know what? Forget Mozart, forget Beethoven and all this. These are the legendary women. These women are
fabulous. And my teacher just was like in awe, like in shock that I would even pick certain women like the, and they're like, weren't they just all in movies, Kate? And I'm like, anyway, they could sing. Like, didn't matter if they were in movies, they could sing. And my grandmother, like, I don't know if she had, no, that was Deanna Durbin my granny had a vinyl of, but she did, but my granny did, like, my grandma did explain, she was like, this is Catherine Grayson, this is one of the women that really inspired me when I was your age, you know, so she really, like, it was so honoring, the fact that I know, like, when she passed away, I was pretty crushed by it as well. I was in high school at the time. I was a senior in high school, and my dad was like, hey, you know, Catherine Grayson passed away. And of course, I was like beside myself. I was like, oh, why are all my idols dying? Like, what is the problem here? Like, what is it? Like, why are they all dying? And my mom is like, you know, just be thankful you shared the earth with her for so long. And I was like, you know, that's kind of true, because I was like thinking of that to myself. And I was like thinking of that before I did this interview. I was like, I shared the earth with Catherine Grayson for like years, and I didn't even realize. And I was like, whoa, mind blown. But, you know, so I know you
got, it makes me so happy to hear you, you know, that my mom's mom, like, yeah, this woman that I came from, mm-hmm, influenced you and your grandmother in that way.
Yeah, she was definitely one of those people that I grew up watching. You know, even though I haven't seen, like, all of her movies, but I have seen, like, Kiss Me, Kate is one of my personal favorites, and Seven Sweethearts as well. Like, those two are, like, my legit favorites. And, you know, but that's, you know, but when I was shown Kiss Me, Kate, I was 9, and Kiss Me, Kate, you know, also stars Ann Miller, which is, you know, another favorite of mine who's also from Texas, which is great.
Yeah.
So I was like, ooh, Ann Miller, this is great. And my granny was like, Catherine Grayson's on there as well. I wanted to ask, and I know this sounds like a really random and weird question, but was your grandmother a redhead or a brunette?
Totally a brunette.
Okay. I was like, I had to make sure, because I was like, in Kiss Me, Kate, she's a redhead and she's a blonde. So I was like,
yeah, she was wigged for both of those.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I've been so lucky. On the anniversary, the first anniversary of her passing, mm-hmm, in 2011, mm-hmm, I got to play Lily Vanessi in Kiss Me, Kate. I got to do it on stage at the Warner Grand here in Los Angeles. And it was a big deal, and it was a really fun production, mm-hmm, and I finally got to play that role. And then in 2014, I got to play Magnolia and Showboat with an opera company. And so I've been able to play two of the roles that she made famous in film.
Right.
And so that was, it was really awesome.
Showboat is amazing.
To be able to sing the same songs and step into the same role. Of course, I'm very different.
Mm-hmm.
I sound different. I look different from her, but
I see some resemblance. I'm not going to lie.
About carrying that on. You know?
I see some resemblance. I'm not going to lie. I was looking at a photo of you and looking at her, and I was like, okay, I can tell they're from the same family. This is great. Like,
yeah,
you have some resemblance.
You know, I look like a combination of both of my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom actually didn't look very much like my grandmother. She looked more like her father.
Uh-huh.
And had his coloring because she was more blonde.
Mm-hmm.
But you can definitely tell we're family. Mm-hmm. I have somewhere, I'll try to find it for you. I have a picture of my grandmother, my mom, me, my two children at that time who are, mm-hmm, both tiny, and then I'm pregnant with my third.
Wow.
And that's the only picture I have of the four generations together.
Wow. Yeah. Whoa, what a power photo. Absolutely.
And I do a solo show.
Woo!
I think it was like 8 months or so after she passed away,
mm-hmm,
I was playing Sarah in Guys and Dolls at, mm-hmm, a theater here in LA,
mm-hmm,
and this producer came up to me afterward and he said, you know, I think you should do a solo show. And I was like, I do not think I should do that because I am an actress, mm-hmm, first and foremost. I'm, mm-hmm, a singer, but I'm an actress first and foremost. That's where I've always been.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I like playing other people. And the thought of me standing on stage for being myself for an hour is terrifying.
Right.
I don't want to do that.
Right.
I want to play other people.
Absolutely.
I've never been that kind of, I've never been like solo artist. That's just not who I am. I like being someone else. himself on stage. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I think you have a really cool story to tell considering who your grandmother was. And so we brainstormed and talked for a while. And so I came up with this title called A Lovely Lineage. Mm-hmm. And I did my first performance of A Lovely Lineage in 2011.
Oh.
I've done it all over. I've done it all over California, but also mm-hmm. I did it up in Oregon, where wow. Oregon Shakespeare Festival is, in Ashland. It's now being made into a web series.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so basically it's not just about my grandmother, because mm-hmm. my story incorporates the fact that my father is also an actor. My yeah. grandfather was also an actor. My mother was an actress. So like,
oh really? I didn't know she yes. was an actress too.
I talk about everything in it. Of course, my grandmother's the most well-known,
yeah.
you know, internationally well-known actor in my family, yeah. but I come from a long line of very talented people, mm-hmm. and I wanted to pay homage to my family. Mm-hmm. And so, and I really did not want to do this at first, but I was talked into it, and I'm glad I did it, because mm-hmm. A, I wanted to honor my family, but B, as an artist, it also grew me mm-hmm. to, like, step outside of my comfort zone,
yeah,
and not just sink into playing a character.
Yeah.
I have to like be myself on stage for an hour and be, you know, be my goofy self. And mm-hmm. so what's cool about it is I sing some of the stuff that she sang in films. Mm-hmm. She sang in Lovely to Look At.
Yes.
Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. Mm-hmm. I sing that. I do stuff from Kiss Me Kate, from Showboat. The show has kind of taken on different, you know, I've had different singing partners throughout the years and things like that.
So yeah.
it's been a wonderful journey. I don't know if I'm going to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of mean people who have said really nasty things to me, like, you know, you're your own performer. You don't need to talk about your grandmother. And I'm like, okay, girl, that's true.
Yeah.
And I have done that plenty of times. I have gotten on stage, in fact, most of the time. And I've never spoken about my grandmother mm-hmm. when I'm playing a role and I'm hired to play a role. But this mm-hmm. was specifically about my family.
Yeah.
So that's, and that was why we developed it. And so anyway, mm-hmm. it's a really cool thing. And when it comes out, I will let you know, because I'm sure like to see it.
I would love to see it. Absolutely.
And I tell stories about, you know, my grandmother touring and mm-hmm. with Camelot and all of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would love to see it. I mean, you know, it's interesting because when I talked to Gloria's granddaughter, and she was like, you know, Gloria's grandchildren are all into different things. So they, one of them's into film, which is interesting. One of them's into music, which, you know, Gloria loved. And then Julia, who's the one I talked to, she's into art, and her art is out of this world. And I'm just like, I remember Gloria kind of explaining to me, you know, I had to walk away. Like, at some point you have to walk away from the industry at some point mm-hmm. in time. Mm-hmm. And she did something else for like 30 plus years, which, you know, made the bills and everything, which is fine. But it's interesting, like, at one point your grandmother was this huge star, like she was on the top of her game, and then she leaves. You know, and people are like,
well, you know, part of it was the studio system mm-hmm. fell apart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here you are at 15 years old and you're signed to a studio system that basically tells you when to eat, what to do. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden that's not there. And it's like, you're supposed to just kind of be in control of everything. And I don't know that the system set these young people up to be able to just get up and be their own agent in the morning, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, she did go on and do Broadway and regional theater, lots of concert work. I mean, she was doing concert work into her 80s.
Oh, really?
Yep. And there was a benefactor who was a huge fan of hers named Jim Rogers. And uh-huh. he actually set up a couple of music studios around the country at different universities in her name.
Oh,
and she
wow.
would go and she would teach master classes.
Whoa.
That's awesome. Universities.
Girl, I would have loved to have been there.
Idaho. Another one I think was in Montana. Wow. So yeah, she was still teaching and singing into her 80s. She, you know, that was what she loved and mm-hmm. really, really singing was what she loved. She did act, and she acted without music several times. She was on a Playhouse 90, and she was on Murder, She Wrote, and she was on a few other things where it was just acting. And when I was young, I remember seeing her at La Mirada Playhouse here in Los Angeles. She played Dottie in Noises Off, which is a hilarious, like, huge, funny show with tons of, like, physical humor and stuff. And, I mean, it was packed and people loved her and she did a great job and there was no music in that. She didn't sing at all. She was just funny. One thing that happened, I think, once she got out of the studio system and didn't have to be, like, in a corset and perfect anymore, she really got to be, when she worked, much more of who she really was. Who you see in Kiss Me, Kate is a lot more what her personality was than any of the other movies. She was much more feisty and funny and witty than a lot of the films that she did, because... I mean, those weren't real.
No.
they were these, like, cutesy, sweet movies, but that's not who anybody is.
Right.
And so I really appreciated, you know, now when I see those films and I see her being just so, like, docile and gentle, and I'm like, yeah, that's not who she was at all.
You're like, I know the truth.
She was feisty and a pioneer, and that is how I will always remember her.
Yeah. I mean... because when I read about, you know, because Gloria knew Deanna Durbin very well, and Deanna Durbin and Catherine Grayson I knew, like, very, like, I was, like, they were, like, my two favorite singers at the time, because I was, like, you know, they had cassettes, and, you know, I had the Kiss Me, Kate album, you know, I had the Showboat album as well, which still a banger, still a bop, absolutely. I'll listen to them every now and then. I'll be like, all right, Miss Grayson, belt it out, girl, like, you got this. And so those were my favorites, and then, you know, because, and then reading about what they were like as people, I'm like, oh my god, like, they were completely different people. So what you see on the screen is, like, a front that they had to put on, because, you know, here we are, we're happy, we're great, and we're perfect, but behind
the
scenes...
Well, and think about when those movies came out, too. Think about the era, you know, and the wartime, and the post-war time that a lot of those movies came out. The last thing anybody wanted to do was think about reality.
Right.
So, you know, so much of the post-World War II baby boomer stuff... is squeaky clean, fun, pretty, you know, the version of Showboat that my grandmother did, it kind of talks about the black people.
Yeah.
But it kind of graces over a lot of what the actual story, which is about, which was about Reconstruction in the Deep South, and it's sad and heavy. So instead of leaning into the sad and heavy, they went as far away from it as they could, and they made it about this love story. And he really, he's a douche, and she shouldn't have loved him.
Yeah.
But, but you know, and when I played the role and I did it on stage, I was like, oh, this is very different. Like, when you start playing the role and you realize, like, and she knows what a douche is early on. Like, she's not stupid. But again, you know, in the 1950s, I think that was like 1953 or 1952 or whatever.
Yeah.
This is post-World War II. This is baby boomer, everything's great, MAGA time, right? Make America great again.
Yeah.
That's what that was. And that's the ideal that people still think we were. To this day, they're like, let's go back to that, when that actually wasn't real. Like, that wasn't legitimately the way people lived their lives. And that was why I think a lot of people, you know, would jump on somebody like Judy Garland for her drug use or whatever, because she portrayed this ideal, right, of this perfect person in these beautiful movies. And meanwhile, she had rings in her nose and was being starved and told what she could do and what she couldn't, and being drugged so that she could keep up that persona that was just not how anybody can live. And so I feel like there's it doesn't surprise me that people idolize that time period. But I always try to remind everyone, like, that's cool and everything, but not real at all. Not real for any of the people in the films, and not real for the period of time that it's representing either.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's healthy to like, you know, to still enjoy all of that and love it and look at it as this wistful, beautiful thing, but not necessarily that we should stop progress as a species because that was the only time worth living.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I find some people do that. They like, they really want it to be the way they want it.
Yeah, because so. I know Gloria Jean gave me a crash course on like Deanna's life and how kind of like her terrible first marriage and how it really shaped her and how she was like on the verge of suicide and all this, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ. And I was like, okay, so this was not the ideal thing for her. And she was like, no. And you can understand why she walked away from it, because most times people just had to walk away. Even Gloria, she got to a point where she didn't like what was going on in Hollywood. You know, she didn't like how her career was being handled. So she was like, you know what? It's been great. It's been a fun time. But you know what? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. But you know what? This just isn't for me anymore. And I'm going to go do other things. Like, this was great. I enjoyed my fame while it lasted. But you know what, sweetheart? We cannot beat an old horse to death. We just cannot. And I'm just not here for it.
And that's how so healthy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, my dad is 84. He is still working as an actor.
Oh, wow.
But he's also been able to do other things, too.
Yeah.
And have children and have a family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and some people, I think their whole life is their career. And I'll tell you, I truly believe that our whole life needs to be a life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how you are a good actor. If you're a performer and you don't have any relationships, you don't have any like reality in your life, how can you portray real people?
Yeah.
Right? If you haven't experienced love, loss, heartbreak, you know, desperation, all those things that come from just like living your life, how can you get on screen or on stage and portray those very things? So
absolutely.
So that's kind of where I land now. Mm-hmm. And here I am with three teens. So
Yeah. So also one of my questions that I like to ask, you know, people of like relatives of famous movie stars, obviously, because, you know, I always assume everything, which I try not to. So I assume you have seen most of your grandmother's work. Do you have a favorite, like favorite film or favorite song that she did?
I think out of all of them, Kiss Me, Kate is my favorite of her, because it's most like who she was to me.
Mm-hmm.
She was so feisty in life and funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that's the one I love the most.
It's my favorite.
But my favorite performance of hers of all time is her singing Smoke It's in Your Eyes and Lovely to Look At.
Mm.
If you haven't seen Lovely to Look At, you can go on YouTube and see just her singing Smoke It's in Your Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most non performancey performance of hers on film. She literally just stands there and sings the song. There's nothing, like, there's no movie magic. It's just her singing the song, and it is so simple and gorgeous. Plus, the song is just so gorgeous.
I need to see it. I've heard it's fabulous. I need to see it. It's on my watch list. So of course I'm gonna go try to find this thing and watch and go, yay! And just watch her.
Yeah. But Smoke It's in Your Eyes is just an absolutely beautiful song. I'm actually teaching a history of musical theater class right now and helping kids, teens that are like getting ready to go to college and stuff. I'm helping them get their books in order.
Yes.
Their audition book, so that they have a song from every era and whatever. And I've been doing all this research on all of this because I learned all of it, but I learned all of it many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And so I'm putting together my curriculum and my materials. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm doing that, like, holy crap, my grandmother starred in pretty much all of these movies.
Yes.
Like, as I'm researching all the operettas, I'm like, And there's another one she starred in, The Vagabond King.
Yep.
And there's another one she starred in, Roberta, which was Roberta is the original operetta that Lovely to Look At is based on.
Mm.
But she got to work with some of the most amazing composers ever. She got to, you know, she knew Cole Porter. Like, it's just, you know, that's the stuff that will never be taken away by time. Like, that is forever. That my grandmother had Cole Porter in her living room playing the piano that I grew up playing. You know, it's an amazing thing when you really think about it. Yeah. It doesn't change the fact that she was a very real person who loved sitting around in nightgowns and robes and slippers. That was just, she was very basic. But you know, that's my story. That's my family story and my heritage. And so I'm really grateful that I knew her, that I got to like ask her questions and hang out with her. And, you know, she didn't like some of my boyfriends and we'd fight and whatever, but like, I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky that I had that relationship.
Yeah,
with her.
Absolutely. And just the fact that she had this great legacy that now you as a performer gets to lead on, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's really inspiring.
Well, that's what my show is about, was like, not only that, but then like my three kids have all done, you know, commercials and all of that.
Wow.
So, yeah. So none of them really want to be an actor, and that is A-okay with me, because I wouldn't wish them being an actor at all, because, you know, it's a hard life. And if you don't want to do this, don't do it.
Yeah.
Go do something else. Go do as much community theater. Do it for fun.
Yeah.
But if you can't hack, you know, being very, very poor for a long time, perhaps, probably not the right gig for you.
Right. You know, I did theater when I was a kid, and I always wanted to be like my favorite stars and stuff, and I just really wanted to be, I wanted to be like the Deanna Durbin, be like Katherine Grayson, and just really just be like them. And, you know, and then finally I found film editing, which I actually did a Katherine Grayson video in film school, which I'm more than happy to send to you. I know I have it in my archives.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I know I have it. And I went from being in front of like people to being behind people. So I found more joy when I went to film school, you know, when we had to edit musicals and stuff. You know, I did an edit of Seven Sweethearts, which is the majority of what the video is based on, but it had the 2010 Remembrance, and I put, you know, Katherine Grayson, you know, your grandmother was featured, which was very lovely. But I enjoyed being behind the scenes more as I got older. You know what I mean? Like, I loved acting and I loved portraying things, but I felt more comfortable editing and being behind a screen. I still do it, you know, I still have people say, edit my video, my bat mitzvah or something, you know, like whatever, and I'll be like, okay, that's fine, like, I'm good with that. So, you know, I have a repertoire of like 200, 300 videos on YouTube, because, you know, I just make videos now for SoundCloud artists. You know, I make, there's an artist named Ozzy, and he's in Ireland, and I make so many videos for that man. Like, it's
That's
crazy.
So cool. I love that.
Yeah, and I love it. And most of them are just video, like, I use old footage mostly. Like, so, like, there's a lot of Seven Sweethearts. There's a lot of Kiss Me, Kate. There's a lot of your grandmother's work in the work that I do, because that, with the music that they send me, it just works. Like, it just magically clicks. So it's so interesting when I get to, you know, because I basically say when I get the music, I basically message them. I say, is there any specific footage that you want? And they say, oh, well, use anything. Oh, I've seen your work, you know, use your old films. And I'm like, okay. And I literally have two hard drives just filled of movies from the 40s and 50s, like 30s, 40s and 50s. And that's basically all that's on my hard drives, because film, not many people know that film takes up a lot of space, which right. especially if you're working like I do, like on an iMac, and you're working in Adobe Premiere, and you're working in DaVinci Resolve, and you're trying to, you know, it takes up a lot of space, takes up like a gig or two of space. So that's basically all I work with. And it works so well for me. But, you know, I really wanted to, you know, one of my favorite schools, and I know you being in New York, you know, I'm sure you've heard of Juilliard. I wanted to to Juilliard when I was a kid. Like, I really wanted to go. And my grandparents were, like, very adamant. They're like, baby, you know, try not to crush my hopes and dreams. But they were literally giving me a crash course on reality. They go, baby, millions of kids want to get into that school. Like, you have to audition. And they don't take everybody. So that kind of was, I was like, do I really, you know, so I had my audition book ready. Like, I was ready to go. And, you know, I was singing a Deanna Durbin song, and I was like, let me do this. So I, you know, I went and auditioned. You know, I was at my school.
That's awesome.
It was at my school. It was like a representative from Juilliard that came and said, you know, they were looking for talent across the country, you know, like seniors in school who wanted to go and audition. So I auditioned. I sang a Deanna Durbin song. I think I sang Granada. I don't remember if I sang it well, but I tried. And they're like, well, what do you like to do? Who are your favorite people that you look up to? And of course, they expected me to say, like, you know, Justin Bieber or somebody like that. And I was like, well, I'm really into Deanna Durbin, and I love Catherine Grayson. They went, Catherine Grayson? Wow. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really weird, friends. Like, I'm sorry.
How do you even know who that is, kid?
Yeah. They're like,
that's amazing.
They're like, oh, and what, you know, what do you like about Miss Grayson? I said, well, I recently re-saw her in a movie called Seven Sweethearts with Peggy Moran and Essie Sakal and Marsha Hunt. I really like those people very much. And I'm just sitting here, and there are these poor people are just sitting here going, okay.
That's so funny. And, you know, Marsha Hunt.
Yes.
She came to see my solo show a couple of years ago.
Really? And, wow.
And her nephew, Alan Hunt, has directed me several times in different shows.
Small world.
Very, very tiny.
Small world. Mind blown.
And now you have to go back and watch Seven Sweethearts so you can see my great aunt, who is my grandmother's sister, who's in the movie.
Yes. And you know, it's funny because I was working with that movie earlier, which I'll send you the video, absolutely, because, you know, why not? She's in it, so why not send it to you? It's so funny because I'm like, because I was reading her about her earlier, and I was like, they were like, yeah, her sister appeared in Seven Sweethearts, and I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Family affair here.
I know. And she just wasn't as well known, but she was beautiful and very talented herself.
Mm.
And my mom, I never knew her. She died before I was born, but my mom always spoke about her with a lot of fondness.
That's so great. So you said that your mom went into the business as well. Did she do stage work? So what did your mom do?
She did stage work. She worked on General Hospital for a while. Oh. She had a hard time getting pregnant with me. She got married at 20 and spent like 5 years trying to get pregnant, and then had me, and then had my brother. And so she was kind of like in and out of the business. I remember her working a bit when I was a kid. She also hated the business. She loved the work and hated the business. And I understand that because that is how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I love my job. I love being on stage, but it's all the stuff around it that I dislike.
Yeah. I can imagine. It's tough. So, it's tough.
I think that was really hard for her. And then I also think, you know, being the daughter of a movie star and being an only child and not having much of time with her father growing up, I don't think she wanted to be in it that much because she wanted more of a real family that was like together. And my parents were married for 45 years, so they're not married anymore, but they were married for a long time. So you know, I think that was what her priority was.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, anybody who goes into the business, especially when they're family member is already as big, you know. When I talk to people's kids, it's like when I talked to Robert Cummings' daughter, she was like, you know, I went into some of the business as well, but I knew that it was very difficult to sustain, so I went into teaching instead. And I was like, okay, you know, like, that's interesting. Like, you see the path and the careers of different people, or some of their parents just barred it all together. Like, Deanna's kids are, like, not even in the business at all. They're, like, doctors and you know, housewives and all that. And they're like, we are fine not doing any of that. So I'm sure Deanna was like, no, don't go into the business. It sucks. And I'm sure she was just like, so, but Gloria was like, Gloria encouraged that with me. Cause Gloria actually asked me, you know, she's like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I'd like to be a film editor. And she goes, oh, a film editor. Okay. So are you trying to get into Hollywood? And I was like, well, I was thinking about it. She goes, don't do it. Don't do it. Like, I'm not trying to crush your hopes and dreams here, kid, but don't do it. Like, it's a very tough industry to be in. You're going to be poor for a lot of the time. You're going to have to try to get a different job. Like, you don't know where your next job is coming from. You have to audition. You have to show them your demo reel, which, you know, I that didn't really hit me until when I started applying for those types of jobs. When, you know, they'd be like, show me your demo reel. How much experience do you have? And I'm like, oh, you know, I don't have that much experience, like, in a professional setting, because I haven't, you know, I haven't been given the chance to do it. You know, I've been to film school. I've done internships. You know, I've done that sort of thing with my film editing work. And, you know, I've taken the work that I've done there. And, you know, they're like, okay, well, the internship that I interned with, they had a hiring freeze and they couldn't hire their interns, which was really sad because I would really like to have worked in that type of industry. It would have been a very stable job. It was like for a newscast and something, so that would have been interesting. But, you know, but looking at a lot of my video editor friends who are out of work right now, who are trying to apply for new jobs, it's tough. And I'm like, you know what, thank God I didn't go into that business, because I don't know what I would have been doing. I really don't.
Well, and one thing I will say is, you're 28 years old. You're young. Mm-hmm. Your life is not all mapped out yet. Right. And the business is going to bounce back. It's going to bounce back huge, because people have been locked in their house for so long. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's something that you really want, my whole thing, mm-hmm. when I had my three kids, mm-hmm. and I sustained an injury from a show I was in, a touring mm-hmm. show I was in, and I was told I'd never be on stage again. And I was your age. I was the exact same age you are.
Oh.
And I thought, you know, when I got married, I had these three babies. I hadn't been on stage for 7 years.
Mm.
And I thought, you know what? If I could just not do this anymore and miss the thing that I trained to do and love so much and is such a huge part of me,
mm-hmm.
or I can, for the rest of my life, wonder woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really grateful that I decided to go back and do what I love. Am I rich? No. Am I famous? No. Was that ever the goal? No.
Right.
The goal was to do what I loved and see what happened from there.
Right.
And I am very grateful that I have had that opportunity.
Right. Absolutely. And, like, that's why I do a lot of video editing on the side. You know, like, I have my day job. You know, I go to work. But I remember when I was approached by, it was some SoundCloud artist, and he just sent me his music and was like, make a video for this. And I was like, I messaged him back and I was like, listen, I can do this, but just please note that I use very specific footage, you know, like I use old film footage. And he was like, oh, I would love to see what that looked like. And I made that and I sent it back to him, and he's like, oh my God, like this is great. Like, I never knew like my music could work with old movies. And I'm like, you'd be surprised what old movies can work with. Like, I'm serious. Like, you would be surprised.
Awesome. That is so awesome.
It's so incredible to, like, especially now when, you know, cause I was, my brother, who's not a movie person at all, you know, he used to love to sing, which was interesting, but you know, he doesn't love singing anymore, which is sad. But you know, he was like, oh, you know, you got your podcast today. Who are you interviewing? And I was like, oh, I'm interviewing Catherine Grayson's granddaughter. He was like, who? And I was like, Nathan, we used to watch her all the time as kids. Like, you don't remember this? And he was like, nope. And I was like, well, interesting enough. It's funny to me because my mom, when she raised me with these people, she thought I would outgrow them. She thought it'd be like a Barney phase. Didn't happen that way. So they stuck with me. And,
well, you know, people are into a lot of different kind of stuff these days. And if you are going to be into beautiful music,
and a more genteel time, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Every time people would be like, who are your favorite stars? And I'm like, you really want to know who my favorite stars are? Because 90 times out of 10, they're either dead or pushing 90. Like, those are the people I love. Well, like, Marsha Hunt's like 103, so I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, she's so lovely. So lovely. And, you know, went through that whole, like, where they were blackballing actors who were communists and all this stuff in the 50s.
Yes.
She went through a lot. Mm-hmm. See, that's what I'm saying. It's, like, that kind of stuff. That happened during that whole, like, hoopla, you know, isn't America great and perfect and everyone has a house with a white picket fence time.
Yeah.
That, you know, everybody went through that time and we don't talk about it as much now.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of idealize this time period, but it wasn't all great.
No, not at all. I mean,
and racism and, you know, sweeping, you know, civil rights and things under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, there was a lot of that happening. And so now I'm trying to focus, like when I am doing work, I'm trying to focus on stuff that will highlight the inequities in our society and things like that. And one thing that my grandmother did is she used to sing for like the USO.
Yes. She did the Hollywood Canteen.
And in the 40s. She supported the troops and she would go overseas and she had a picture in her dressing room. She had a little dressing room off of her bedroom and there was this picture of her singing for the troops during World War II.
Oh, wow.
And with like Bob Hope. And that was something that was really important to her. And she was honored actually here by a group of local veterans. And I actually got to sing at that for her. It was really fun. But she was, you know, she would definitely understood the sacrifice that our troops made. And, you know, she gave back.
Yeah.
I think that's, if that's the one thing I can say about my grandmother over everything else, over her beautiful voice and how beautiful she looked and the gorgeous photos and clothes and all the things, is that she gave back to people and was extremely generous.
Yeah.
And didn't have to be.
Yeah.
You know, that's a choice at that point. When you're famous and wealthy and beautiful and all those things, you can just sit around and be a jerk, or you can give back. And she gave back to her family and to her people that loved her. I mean, the reason that you and I are doing this interview is because of Kayla.
Yes.
Who is a huge fan of my grandmother's. And I only know through Facebook and stuff, but I mean, we've been friends on Facebook now for 10 years because after my grandmother died, she found me.
Yeah.
She was like, just so you know, I have all these photos for you, that you probably don't have that I've collected, and sent me all this stuff.
Wow.
And was so lovely because again, I wasn't, this was my grandmother. So I wasn't a fangirl of my grandmother. I didn't have collector stuff that, I actually inherited a bunch of stuff after she passed away. That, you know, I inherited clothing and all these things, but I didn't have access to all of those kind of collector's items. And so Kayla like reached out to me and I have actually learned a lot from her and a couple of other friends of mine who are big fans of my grandmother. So it's really nice to like
cool,
you know, another person that has been influenced by my grandmother's life.
It was, you know, it's so funny because funny you mentioned Kayla, because I knew that she knew Catherine, so I knew to your grandmother, I knew that she knew her, so I reached out to her and I was like, listen, I need to ask you a question here. I'm going to do this podcast here and I need help. How do I reach out to Catherine Grayson's family? And she goes, actually, you should reach out to her granddaughter because she's approachable and friendly and great. And I was like, splendid. And she was like, hey, if you want, I can, you know, help you out with that. And I was like, if you wouldn't mind, like, I mean, I'm an autistic adult. Like, I already have problems communicating enough with people. So I'm like,
well, I would not have known that from our conversation, just so you know. And I don't feel like you have any problems communicating. You sound like any one of my friends. Like, I feel like I've known you forever. Just so you know.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny because, like, we went out to lunch today. Like, I'll go out to lunch with my parents and my mom will be like, are you nervous about this interview? And I'm like, I hope I can come up with things to talk about. Like, I was psyching myself out, and I'm like, I usually do, and I'm like, God, Kate, talk about her grandmother. That's the whole point of this interview. Like, you're talking about legacy and everything, and you're talking to this, and remember, she's a person too, so ask about her industry. You know, she's also a star. You know, she's also been in business. She's also in the business, so do, you know, ask about that. So, you know, just talk about normal things. And I was like, God, like, how am I going to do this? But, you know, it's strange because, you know, Caleb was like, she's great. Like, she's awesome. Like, she's really approachable. And I'm like, okay. So I messaged you on Instagram and I was like, please, for the love of God, like, let's do this. I've been talking to, like, a lot of my friends and they're like, you should do a Catherine Grayson, a Catherine Grayson episode. I'm like, oh, she's got a granddaughter. I should.
Well, that's great. I'm so, so glad it worked out. I do actually have to go, though.
Yes. I was going to say, thank you so much for joining me today. And I hope we can keep in touch because you seem so
absolutely
great.
Absolutely. Let's keep in touch. Yes. And it's just an honor to be able to be the representative from my family.
Yes.
To discuss her. And you know, please stay in touch with me. And
please.
Thank you for supporting her and loving her so much.
Of course. She's you know, she's like, of the top singers I love, you know, she's one of those top singers that I love. And I want to keep her alive as much as I can. Because, you know, when people die, for me, as an autistic person, I don't understand death that much. And I've never understood death that much. Like, when I lost my grandparents, I don't have any grandparents left, unfortunately. But when they died, I didn't understand it, like, why they died. Like, I know they were elderly and they had health issues. But at the time, I was like, why is this happening? And the same thing when your grandmother passed away. I was like, she was 88. Like, she was fine. And my mom's like, no, sweetie, when it's their time to go. So, you know, I want to keep their legacy alive as much as I can, is because I feel like they're going to fade as, you know, they're fading, and I don't want them to fade as much as, like, you know, as much as, like, people are like, who's Catherine Grayson? I'm like, oh, who's Catherine Grayson? Are you kidding? Like, you should know. So,
right.
I definitely want to help keep them alive as much as I can, because that's just my passion. It's something I've wanted to do for years. And I'm so glad that you kind of keep on the legacy as well. Like, you're a performer, you do Broadway, like, you do a lot of great things, and, you know, I wish you all the best, and I hope that you get to be on stage again at some point. I hope you do.
Thank you. I will. We just have to get past this nasty time.
Yes.
And I hope you keep following your dreams too.
Yes, I will keep video editing. I will send you, because I'm actually going to edit this, and I'll send you the link so you can post and share this podcast wherever you want. You know, just be like,
okay,
hey, this is where this is. But I will definitely send you the Catherine Grayson video, because I know I know where it is. I just got to find it and send it to you. I hope you like it. I made it in film school like 5 years ago.
Thank you so much. And thank you again for having me on your show.
Of course. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. It's such an honor, truly. Like, it really is. Like, I love her so much. Like, you have no idea.
Well, I do know. And I know how much that means to you. And so this really means a lot to me.
All right. Well, we shall keep in touch, and I will send you this shortly.
All right, you take care.
You too. All right,
okay, bye. Bye-bye.